Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This Tuesday is our nation's birthday. On July 4th, 1776, the Continental Congress passed the Declaration of Independence, and we became a nation. I was teaching American government in college, and during the first day of class, I would ask why we celebrate the 4th of July. In 15 years of teaching, I had one student who knew. As we celebrate this Independence Day, be sure your family knows. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. What have you been up to, Skip?
Well, Colonel, primarily just watering my garden and weeding my garden, you know, just getting it all ready. Because, you know, as you know, we grow most of our own fruits and vegetables. So just having a good time doing that. It's been hot, but now that the rains have come, I feel a lot better, Colonel.
You know, for a long time, I made it a point of growing at least some of the food that we ate, and that was really a good feeling. So I know what you're talking about. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On news and comment by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss the total stupidity of Marine vet Daniel Perry being charged with a crime for stopping a man from physically harassing passengers on a New York subway. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, General Jerry Boykin will discuss our nation's need to return to God and some other issues. Then Marine vet and former Border Patrolman Gil Mazza will report on the situation on our southern border. And we'll hear from Colonel Scott Fisher about the Officers Christian Fellowship and outreach to everyone in the military community. And then Wayne and Andre will present Face the Fight. It's about suicides.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really welcome your input to this show. Please send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, big trouble in Russia. Wagner mercenary group leader Yevgeny Prigozhin called for an armed uprising against Russia's military leaders after alleging that Russia's top general, Valery Gerasimov, had ordered an attack, killing some 2,000 Wagner soldiers at their field camps in Ukraine. Prigozhin's forces managed to seize Rostov-on-Don, a southern Russian city near the Ukrainian border and home to the headquarters of the Russian Southern Military District, which oversees Moscow's war efforts in Ukraine. Then Prigozhin ordered his forces to march toward Moscow, a military advancement that he called a march for justice. Then Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko brokered a deal with Prigozhin, agreeing to move to Belarus and Moscow dropping criminal charges against him. Prior to the deal, President Vladimir Putin vowed the rebels would face inevitable punishment. Colonel, this has got to affect the war in Ukraine in some way, don't you think?
It sure does. The only thing I'm sure of is this event is not over. Russia's analysts don't expect Prigozhin to disappear quietly into the night. He's been a very vocal figurehead for tens of thousands of fighters in Ukraine and has been an important figure to President Putin, operating in the shadows for a long time. He spent years doing dirty work for the Kremlin, from fighting in Syria to fighting in Ukraine in 2014 when it annexed Crimea. But after challenging Putin's authority and humiliated him, questions about what guarantees he was given for his security and his role going forward are still to be answered. And how much control Belarusian leader Lukashenko will be able to exert over him and what threat his troops will pose to Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine? Stay tuned.
The Netherlands is citing possible security risks as it ponders legislation that would see screening of international students who intend to pursue doctoral studies in technical professions, a spokesman announced. This is the most recent step taken by the Dutch government to hinder Chinese entities and students from accessing Dutch technology. According to the Education Ministry, the new law would apply to all students coming from outside the European Union, not just Chinese students. Dutch universities are also increasingly reluctant to accept doctoral students with scholarships subsidized by the Chinese government.
China is a huge threat to all nations and certainly uses colleges and universities as a way of gaining knowledge and influencing the education of citizens. We need to get China totally out of our universities, indeed, out of our whole country.
And NATO will set up a liaison office in Tokyo in 2024 and use it as a hub for cooperation with Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and South Korea, a plan China has described as unwelcome. In May, Japan's ambassador to the U.S. described the NATO plan, the first such NATO presence in Asia to ease regional consultations. He noted that French President Macron objected to the plan. NATO will be deepening its ties with the four major partners in the Pacific, forming a collaboration on issues such as cybersecurity and space.
NATO is an effective organization, and there certainly is a need for more allied cooperation in that part of Asia as everyone steps up to confront a very aggressive China.
And cash-strapped Pakistan is a NATO member and last month received its first shipment of discounted Russian crude oil as Pakistan seeks to forge ties with heavily sanctioned Russia amid its declining foreign reserves.
Given Pakistan's support for some terrorist organizations, it's not too surprising that few, if any, NATO nations, and Pakistan is a NATO nation, want to help them.
And China called comments by President Biden referring to Chinese leader Xi Jinping as a dictator extremely absurd and irresponsible as a new rift threatened to upset tentative efforts to stabilize the relationship between the two countries. The clash of words comes just over a day after Secretary of State Antony Blinken concluded a visit to Beijing that sought to break the ice in a relationship that has hit a historical low. While both sides saw those talks as productive, they did not result in any significant breakthroughs beyond an agreement to return to a broad agenda for cooperation and competition. Biden, at the fundraiser, said Xi was embarrassed over recent tensions surrounding a suspected Chinese spy balloon that was shot down by the Air Force over the East Coast. Quote, "That's a great embarrassment for dictators when they didn't know what happened," Biden said. Foreign Ministry spokesman Mao Ning, responding to a question about Biden's remarks, said the comments at a fundraiser in California, quote, "go totally against facts and seriously violate diplomatic protocol and severely infringe on China's political dignity," unquote.
There is no question at all that Xi Jinping is a dictator who runs a dictatorship. I do understand why he doesn't like that being said publicly. On the other hand, the decision that our government made to let that Chinese spy balloon fly over our nation was so stupid, and the president's comments, that make us look bad too. Yuck.
Uncovering when people are lying about their military service could be harder under a proposal in Congress to restrict public access to some military records, researchers of stolen valor and military history say. At issue is a provision included in the House Appropriations Committee's draft 2024 Pentagon spending bill that would bar the military from releasing basic details about someone's service record without that person's consent. "It's a horrible idea," said Doug Stirner, who curates a database of Medal of Honor recipients and championed a law that makes stolen valor a federal crime if it's for profit. "It's a horrible idea, and it flies in the face of the true history of the men and women that preserved this great nation," he said. Right now, researchers, journalists, and other members of the public can quickly ask the military services for some basic information about a service member's record without filing a formal public records request that could take months or years to process. Releasable information typically includes name, rank, past and present duty assignments, awards, and decorations, among other details. Under the proposed defense spending bill, a current or former service member or their next of kin, if they are dead, would have to consent to releasing that information. If the service member or their family does not consent, members of the public would have to file a formal Freedom of Information Act request to obtain the service information, but the service member or their family would still have to be notified of the request, potentially adding even more time to the infamously slow FOIA process.
I totally oppose the idea of restricting availability of military service information to the public. And yes, being able to identify and confront those who decide to wear insignia and awards they did not earn is important. Falsely presenting oneself with military awards should be illegal. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some war wisdom. Then we'll talk with General Jerry Boykin. At ease, troops, take a break.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. According to the FBI, 85% of altercations don't rise to the level of deadly force. Make sure you have some open-handed self-defense skills or pepper gel to ward off these less-than-lethal attacks. Always have a plan to repel non-lethal attackers and make sure you are in compliance with all self-defense laws in your jurisdiction. This is just one way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. A U.S. Marine veteran, Daniel Penny, appeared in court in May on a manslaughter charge over the chokehold death of a mentally ill homeless man behaving erotically on a New York City subway. The death earlier that month of Jordan Neely, a Michael Jackson impersonator who often performed on the train, sparked outrage after it was caught on a camera. Neely was confronting and threatening death to a number of subway passengers. Penny saw this happening and took action to control the attacker. This is what I'd expected any adult male to do, especially a Marine veteran. It brought into sharp focus two burning issues in America's biggest city: mental illness among those living on the streets and the residents' fears for their safety on the underground. Daniel Penny was arraigned in a Manhattan criminal court after surrendering to police. The 24-year-old was charged with manslaughter in the second degree and released on bail. He did not enter a plea. The charge accuses Penny of recklessly causing the death of a 30-year-old Neely, but it stops short of saying he had intent to kill. If convicted, Penny could face up to 15 years in prison. Attorney Lennon Edwards, representing Neely's family, said Penny should have been charged with murder. Quote, "We need a full cup of justice here," he told reporters. Penny's lawyers have said they are confident their client will be fully absolved of any wrongdoing. He risked his own life and safety for the good of his fellow passengers. The unfortunate result was the unintended and unforeseen death of Mr. Neely, they said. Okay, the death on May 1st angered activists and left-leaning lawmakers and sparked several protests calling for the arrest of Penny. The video showed Neely on the ground in a subway train with Penny appeared to hold him around the neck for several minutes in front of a few onlookers. Witnesses said the serviceman restrained Neely after the latter was screaming at passengers for food and drink and said he was willing to die. Neely was reportedly not physically threatening anyone at the time. Family and friends told media that he had a history of mental illness, like many living on the streets in a city of almost 9 million residents. Reports said Neely had been arrested dozens of times and that his mother had been murdered when he was a teenager. Mental health and homeless activists said the city had failed Neely. The incident also had a racial element. Neely was black and Penny's white. Protesters decried Neely's death as an example of white vigilantism. Some social media users said they were scared to take New York's underground and praised Penny for intervening, but many condemned the level of force used. Penny was a Marine infantryman, a squad leader. There's no room for racism in an infantry unit. We all depend on each other. I know this personally. I say this again, no racism. In my not very humble opinion, this is beyond insane. A homeless man on a subway was confronting and screaming at passengers wanting money and talking about death. A male passenger, Marine vet Daniel Penny, saw this and pulled the guy away. Penny saw that this confronter was harassing people, probably including women. Penny didn't know if the guy had a gun or a knife, but he wasn't willing to simply stand by and allow these, at least verbal, assaults to continue. Isn't this what we'd expect of all good citizens? So he grabs Neely from behind. Neely resists. So he puts his arm around Neely's neck and holds him. What else would he do? There's no cop around, the train's moving, and no other adult came to assist. The more Neely struggled, the tighter he had to hold him. Finally, Neely collapsed. Why did he collapse? From the drugs he was on? No one knew. I wonder how many of the protesters would have been happy to have the guy screaming and yelling their faces in the subway and would be happy that no one tried to stop him. If my wife or sister or nieces or nephews or female friends or their children were victims of such an attack, I'd sure confront and deal with the attacker if I were present. And if I wasn't there, I'd sure hope some other adult would. Do you agree? Now remember, when you're confronting an unknown assailant who is presently or potentially violent, you just don't know whether he or she is armed with a knife or a gun or brass knuckles or whatever. So you must assume they are and treat them that way. I know all police officers will agree with me, because anytime they find themselves in a violent situation, they must assume the attacker's armed. If you don't make that assumption, you may find yourself and others wounded or dead. The race thing is nonsense. The guy was attacking or preparing to attack innocent civilians. No one was helping solve the problem. An attacker is an attacker regardless of his or her race. I'm very sorry that Jordan Neely died, but he brought it on himself. We are now creating an environment where people can be attacked in public and no one dares assist them for fear of being charged with a crime? Do we want to kill the attacker? No, but we can't take a chance on him hurting others. Do you want to live in that kind of a community? I sure don't. Marine vet Daniel Penny is a hero. He deserves congratulations and support. If I'd been on that train and I was disabled, unable to confront the jerk, and I saw Daniel there and he didn't intervene as he did, I'd be calling him names, very nasty names. Our nation is experiencing more and more crime in the past couple of years. More and more citizens are getting armed and trained as a result of that increase in crime. And the message of this attack on Marine Daniel Penny is that we dare not help each other in times of attack. This new culture tells criminals the law's on their side. Get out there and attack. How does this make any sense? We need to be proud of our veterans, all of whom were willing to put their lives on the line to protect us and our nation. And we need to be proud of our police, who daily put their lives on the line to protect us. And we need to expect and encourage all good Americans to stand up against evil and protect each other to the extent that we can. Marine vet Daniel Penny is a hero and a great role model for all of us. Thank you, Daniel, for your good judgment and actions. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Did you know every year the Coast Guard places a buoy at the spot believed to be where Francis Scott Key wrote the Star Spangled Banner? The British captured Washington, D.C. on August 24, 1814, and took prominent physician Dr. William Beans prisoner. Key, who was a well-known lawyer in the area, was sent to assist in getting Dr. Beans released. Aboard the British ship holding Dr. Beans, the officers agreed to release him, but they would not allow them to return to Baltimore until after the bombing of Fort McHenry. Key watched the British bomb the fort for 25 hours until they finally gave up and they were unable to destroy the fort. Following the attack, Keyes looked to the fort to see the flag still flying over it and wrote a poem, originally titled The Defense of Fort McHenry, and it was later handed out as a handbill. The poem was then set to a tune of a British drinking song, yeah folks, a drinking song, and was renamed the Star Spangled Banner. Each spring, the buoy is placed in the approximate spot where Key is believed to have written the famous poem, Turn Anthem, which is about 500 yards south of the river's shipping channel. It's pulled out in December and given a fresh coat of stars and stripes and then put back in the water again each spring. The buoy itself is made from steel and measures 29 feet long, weighs around 6,400 pounds. And although its only purpose is to be a memorial, it does show up on nautical charts once it's placed in the water, and it disappears each fall when the buoy is pulled. The buoy's history dates back to 1972, when a local history buff persuaded the Maryland Naval Militia to paint a buoy with the 1914 flag, stars, and stripes, and place it at the location. The buoy was later removed because it was non-navigational, and there were no funds to maintain it. Finally, in 1979, permission was granted to place a buoy, and the Coast Guard has been maintaining it ever since. So, now you have a great little story to tell during your 4th of July festivities this year. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. That was great. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the state of our nation with General Jerry Boykin. Then we'll talk about our southern border with Marine Gil Gaza. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall at the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-up. Start with 50, take a break and do another 50, then stand at ease.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer when you shop at PatriotFoods.com. We give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off, PatriotFoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Well, it's an honor to welcome back to the show retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He's the Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council. He was the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence under President George W. Bush. He had 36 years in the military. He spent 13 years in the Delta Force. He was involved in numerous high-profile missions, including the 1980 Iran hostage rescue attempt and the 1992 hunt for Pablo Escobar in Colombia and Black Hawk Down incident in Mogadishu, Somalia. Oh, and he's an author. So welcome back, General. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you, Denny.
Sir, take a minute and discuss a couple of the highlights of your time in uniform.
Yeah, you know, Denny, I was very blessed to be able to be in for 36 and a half years. And even more blessed to be able to work with the kind of soldiers that I worked with. Because I was in special operations, I was in Rangers and the Green Berets and the Delta Force. I just worked with some of the finest soldiers that the Army has produced in many years. And as a result of that, I think that I learned a lot. I grew a lot. I matured because of those non-commissioned officers that really took me under their wing and decided that they were going to help me to be all I could be, as the old Army motto used to go. And so I really enjoyed my time largely because of the kind of people that I was working with. And I if I could do it again, I would. Unfortunately, I'm a little long in the tooth for that, but I got to see a lot of the world. And I think I saw combat on either four or five continents, and that was an eye opener in many ways.
Sir, I understand, and I also understand that I tell people that, well, as a retired officer, they could activate me. I think the only reason they'd ever send me overseas is if we're invaded. Okay, you are now very active with the Family Research Council. That's such a great organization. Take a minute, sir, and talk about what the Family Research Council is and does.
Yeah, the Family Research Council was founded 40 years ago this year by James Dobson. And what Dobson wanted was he wanted to have a office in Washington, D.C. that could advocate for and lobby for, and that is lobbying Congress, for public policy that supported faith, family, and freedom. If you come to this building that we're in downtown D.C., you look up over the door, and what you see on the door that opens into the street is faith, family, and freedom. And that is really what we're focused on. And now we have a number of things that have sort of become our signature activities. One is standing for religious freedom. Two is not only lobbying Congress, but also helping them when they need any kind of support from us with regards to developing a public policy that supports faith, family, or freedom. We also have a network of pastors. And what we do is when we do take on a particular mission, if you could use that term, we let the Congress know that we have a pastors network that will rally support all over the country. And we literally have pastors in every state in the union. And those pastors, when we need their help, we need them to open the phone lines and bombard Congress or bombard one of the committees with something that's important to our constituents, but to really to Christians across the nation. We will activate that pastor's network. We also have a men's conference, and we do these men's conferences called Stand Courageous, and we do those all over the country. And we just finished one in Houston at First Baptist Church Houston here about the first week of June. And we had over 800 men there, closer to 900, I guess. And let me tell you, it is a beautiful thing when you see that many men, especially those with their sons there at the altar and just thanking God for what he has done for them or praying to receive the redemption of Jesus Christ, or praying for a need. And it's just an incredible thing. And that's obviously the thing that I think I enjoy most about being here, is being able to be at those conferences. But we also have a radio television program 5 days a week. And that has become really a nationwide network where we put out information to people that is kind of unfiltered. It is the truth. We work hard to make sure that what we're putting out is the absolute truth, and you don't have to second guess what we're really trying to say. And the radio portion of that is called Washington Watch, and radio and TV. But we also have a thing called Washington Stand, which is nothing but a news network. And we're getting a lot of valuable information out to people all over the country. And I could go on, but those are the primary things that we're engaged in.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Jerry Boykin. General, you seem to be suggesting that this nation is a blessing and it came from God, and that it's reasonable for God to expect us to be good stewards of this nation he gave us. Is that what you're suggesting?
Unquestionably, yes. As a matter of fact, over the weekend, I spent a couple of, actually almost 2 days working on my 4th of July message. I lost my iPad and I had 15 years of presentations on there. So I had to start all over. And it was a blessing that I did, because I found new things as I was doing the research and everything. I found new things. I'm not a historian, but I love history. And I read history every day. I read history. I really find nothing in fiction that appeals to me, but I am eager to know more about this country. And, you know, when you look at those 56 men, people will say, well, they were a bunch of hard drinking, slave owning white men. And they were all deist. In other words, they meant that, or they believed that God created the earth, but then he left it to its own devices, and he just kind of backed away and left us to create our own environment. And that nothing could be further from the truth. The fact is that 56 men all professed Orthodox Christianity. Now, the historians now, those that are accurate, people like David Barton and others like him that are really top-notch and very knowledgeable about the founding of the country will tell you that even though all 56 of them professed Orthodox Christianity, there were probably three that were not what they professed to be, at least in their actions. But even they, sort of like Benjamin Franklin, when he stood up and called for prayer. This is a man that was absolutely criticized for being a deist. But he's the one that stood up in the Continental Congress and said, I suggest that we open every one of these sessions with prayer for my local clergyman that can provide over it. So even though he may have struggled with his own faith, he understood the power of prayer. And I think that's can be said for all of them. And David Barton wrote a great book called The Jefferson Lies, probably one of the, if not the most important of the founding fathers, has been maligned and denigrated. And then when you read David Barton's book, the Jefferson lies, you find out that there was an incredible emphasis on the right to worship by this man that's accused of being a deist. And he had three crises in his life, and that's when his faith hit a low point.
Yes, sir. We'll be continuing this conversation in the next segment, and General Boykin will be staying with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, troops, it's time for push-ups. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do. Well, a couple times a week anyway. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success? You.
We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health, and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're continuing our conversation with General Jerry Boykin. General, you were talking a bit about our founding fathers, and your research is the same as mine. Perhaps three of them were actually deists, but even they weren't very good deists. They were closer to being Christians. Why don't you finish that thought, sir?
Well, I think you just said it. They were professing Christians, Orthodox Christians, but from at different periods in their lives, they obviously were either confused or had just lost interest in their own faith. And so, but nonetheless, 53 out of the 56 were professing, and also by all accounts, what they said, what they did, they were really people of the Christian faith. They were evangelicals, and they are the men that signed that thing on the 2nd of July, not the 4th of July. Yes. But they signed a document there that separated them from the crown of England. And let me tell you, you just think about the courage that took. And they had a faith foundation. And I think it's important for us to not only look at them, but to look at the church, look at the emphasis and impact that the church had as the nation came closer to war, came closer to separation. It was the churches. It was what the British called the Black Robe Regiment.
Yes, sir.
That were, getting up in the pulpit and just hammering away on the theme of freedom, individual freedom. God, as far as they were concerned, God meant for men to be free. So these men, they formed a nation, and they handed it off to the next generation. And each generation subsequent to that handed it off to the next generation. And now I'm sad to say, Denny, that my generation, I think we have stood by and allowed too many bad things, too many evil things to come into our society, to come into our nation. But the good news is, I personally believe that we're seeing an awakening. We're seeing an awakening, not only a spiritual awakening, and I do see that, but also I think we're seeing an awakening of people looking at some of the foolish, evil things that we're doing and saying, this is crazy. We have to stop and turn this around. And I believe that if we will humble ourselves and pray, as 2 Chronicles says, humble ourselves and pray, turn from our wicked ways, seek his face, that it is only a matter of time until we will right the wrongs in this country will right the ship. And I think that we'll see a new day in America, getting back to what we were founded to be, which is a Christian nation.
Yes, sir. Our Pledge of Allegiance, even to this day, says we are one nation under God.
Yes.
So it's time to get active. I like saying, put feet to your prayers. You could pray about something, but then do something.
Yep.
God will use you. He'll protect you. And that doesn't mean it won't hurt. It doesn't mean anything like that. But it does mean there was no country in the world as a model for a constitutional republic like we got. And we fought the most powerful nation in the world, England, who had an army in our country and a navy off the shore, and we still won.
Yeah.
That wasn't an accident. That wasn't great. Washington was a great general, but he wasn't that good.
Well, he lost more battles than he won. But I would suggest that your audience find two books to read about. One of them is by Nathaniel Philbrick, and it's called In the Eye of the Hurricane, and it's about the miracles that occurred. And he's not necessarily a Christian, but he recognized, you know, as a secular writer, he recognized that there were miracles that occurred that helped George Washington and his army to win the battle for freedom. And the other book is by a guy named Larkin Spivey. He's a retired lieutenant colonel who was a history professor at the Citadel. He's a good friend of mine. And he writes about the miracles of the American Revolution. And those are two really good books. If you want to see the hand of God, you want something that will affirm your beliefs that America was founded as a Christian nation, those are two that I think will help you with that and be able to counter some of the things that we're hearing from revisionist historians.
Yes, sir. We need to take that information and then do something with it. We need to be careful. I've often said that most Americans who vote stupid. I always vote Republican. I always vote Democrat. I always vote pro-life. I always vote pro-choice. Somebody gives me a list and I vote on it. I don't even know what the positions are. And I certainly don't know the people I vote for. I never communicate with them. I never hold them accountable. We need to be responsible citizens, don't you think?
I absolutely do. And I'll tell you what makes me fighting mad, and I'm serious about this. It's when somebody says, well, my vote just doesn't count. I'm not going to vote. I want to grab them and shake them till the teeth rattle. Because no, your vote doesn't count if you don't cast it. But you have a responsibility as a good American citizen to go to the polls and vote. It's the most important individual right that they gave you with regard to governance. And that is to go and vote. It is important that we understand how the founding fathers looked at this. And they looked at it as we're going to break away from the most powerful nation in the world, at least militarily. And we're going to create a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. And that's exactly what they did. But we get there by being able to and willing to go to the polls and vote and choose our own representatives.
And hold them accountable.
Yes, absolutely.
Once you vote for them, that's not enough. I used to teach American government at college. I'd pick a student. I'd say, I'll tell you why you'll be a lousy representative if you decide to run. Because you can't read minds. And most of the people who vote won't communicate with you, but they get mad at you when you don't do what they want you to do. We've got to be active citizens, and that's more than just voting, I think.
I totally agree with you on that, Denny. And being active citizens also includes running for office.
Yes, sir.
It includes going to the school boards and standing up for the evil that has come into our schools. It's going to the city council when they tell you they don't want you to fly an American flag and letting them have a piece of your mind. And I'm in this right now. And that's the reason it came to mind is the county that I live in here in Virginia wants to take down the American flags. And I just simply, you know, there is no alternative but to go and let them know how you feel about it. But if you're going to be an active citizen, you've got to find your role in that and you've got to be out supporting candidates. You find a candidate that you know has the right focus, has the right values, has the right faith, and you get out there and do something to help them. And it doesn't matter if you just hold one little fundraiser for them or something, or you just get out and put signs up for them. It doesn't matter. Whatever you do, but don't just sit on the sideline, because you can't complain if you didn't vote. Don't say a word. Don't open your mouth if you did not vote. Don't open your mouth about your disappointment in somebody that's representing you at whatever level that might be.
Yes, sir. We are responsible to be good citizens. That means as active as we can be. Different people at different times. We've got a lot of little kids at home. You have less free time than other folks. But it's our country, and we're not supposed to sit here. Like, if you get a new car, you have to change the oil. You have to keep it tuned up. You can't just drive it and expect it to last. Well, you can't just live in this country without doing your role.
Right.
General, thank you. Thank you for your very appropriate comments and for your service to our nation. Any final thoughts, sir?
Well, this is a great time, but everybody needs to remember that the Declaration of Independence was just the beginning. There was a lot that came after that, but the first step was the Declaration of Independence. Get history back in the schools where your children go or where you live. Get history, American history, back in the schools, because it's going to help restore us being proud to be Americans. And I am proud to be an American.
Amen. Thank you, sir. God bless you.
God bless you, Denny.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour discussing our southern border with Marine vet Yael Mazza. Then Colonel Scott Fisher will present the Officers Christian Fellowship, and we'll learn about Face the Fight, dealing with suicide. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom Troops. It's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.